like a lot of Amazon FBA businesses are popping up, and they had started quite a few years ago, but it can take time for it to snowball and traction on for sure. And Amazon FBA is a great way to go about it. People, I think before this even existed, didn't realize that there was like things like Zappos and different companies and different ways you could do order fulfillment for, instead of having to do just drop shipping, you could buy bulk, you know, from wherever you want in the world and send to an order fulfillment agency. But the way Amazon does it is, you know, they make things so much easier for you and feasible for everybody.
Hi, folks. It's the Quiet Light Podcast with Joe Valley and Mark Dast. Quiet Light Brokerage is the leader in helping entrepreneurs build, buy, and sell their online businesses. Since 2007, we have helped thousands buy and sell online businesses. And now, we're putting our extensive knowledge in your earbuds with our trademark relentless honesty and a few laughs along the way.
What do you do?
I play the orchestra. And you're a good musician. You sit right there. You're the best in your role.
And now, here's Joe and Mark.
Hey, Mark, one of the things we need to do is to plug the movie intro. Folks, if you know who that, or what that movie was, shoot us a note and we will give you an on-air mention. Chris, our content director, is big on that. It's awesome. And no cheating, though. We've had a few folks that admitted that they looked it up on Google. Don't do that. Just send us a note by listening.
Yeah, I think both folks have actually guessed right.
Yes.
I'm looking at you, Mike Nunez.
All right. Listen, you had Jared Krause on the podcast talking about something that we talk about all the time, but it's good to hear from someone else. We technically, as Jason will always say, our client is the seller. We have a contractual obligation to the seller. But as I always say to buyers, look, I can't help my client unless I help you as well, the buyer. And constantly having conversations with buyers on the approach to buy a business. It's great to hear from someone else. That's what Stephen does. You say he's from Australia. Jared. You had a conversation with him about this. And his job, his process is actually teaching entrepreneurs or people that might be from the corporate world how to buy an online business. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah. So he does coaching in this. And obviously, he has a lot of background experience in this as well. Started out buying smaller sites and kind of building up. And we just had a conversation about his views on buying, which is, I think, fascinating for us to do in our role, because, you know, you and I have some pretty set ideas as to the best way to go about buying online businesses. We do this from the seat that we sit in, which is working on behalf of sellers and representing them. But like you said, we can't do our job well unless buyers are also doing the job well. And a good deal, a deal that's good for a buyer is oftentimes a good deal that's good for our client as well. Because if everybody wins, everybody's happy afterwards, everybody's making money, that's the goal, right? So Jared and I talked a lot about some of the things he looks at. You know, what does he look at and what does he coach when he's teaching people how to make that first acquisition? So some of the things we talk about, you know, are like, what are the struggles that people run into? How to get over this imposter syndrome that some buyers might feel when they're coming into an acquisition, like, I'm really not the same class of this guy that built this business. And he gives some really nice practical tips on how to overcome some of those problems and address those head on. So I want to get right into this episode here and just listen to what Jared has to say, have this conversation. And just, by the way, a huge asterisk here. I apologize. My microphone wasn't working properly on this. I thought I was recording through my regular podcast mic and was just going through my laptop mic. So it's going to be awful. But here's the good news. I'm not really the person that you need to listen to. You need to listen to Jared. He's got the good information in this episode.
Well, let's get right to it then.
All right, Jared, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. I don't know if you've listened to many of our previous podcasts, but we typically have our guests introduce themselves. I figure you know yourself way better than I know you. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thanks so much for having me on. I really appreciate it. So about myself is I'm from the Gold Coast, Australia. I love surfing, and that was my goal, to start making money online so I could travel around the world and surf. I got started in this a fair few years ago now, and I started buying one business, and then I bought another one and another one. And the reason I came into this is because I tried to start my own website, Mark, and I just sucked. And I failed a fair few times, and I started failing forward and came across that saying of 90% of all startups fail. Well, it's actually, the study's been done with that one. So I realized if 90% of startups fail, why don't I go away and buy a website that's past that 90% failure rate, so I'm not just struggling and struggling and struggling. And I did that. I taught myself how to buy a website, and then I got a little bit of help from different mentors along the way. And then I bought one and another one, and it kept growing and, you know, eventually replaced my income to a point where people started asking me how to do it. And that's where I got in that position of teaching people as well, just basically through my learning.
Yeah. So yeah, when you say that you tried starting some websites and they failed, can you share any of those with us? Not to make you relive the failures of the past, but we've all had them. So interested in knowing.
Yeah. Well, the hardest one was, so I was in Egypt and I realized I didn't want to go back home broke to my job as a plumber. And I was like, I need a goal here. So I thought, right, what I really want to do is travel the world and make money online. So I typed into Google how to travel the world and make money online. Literally typed that in, and what popped up was people travel blogging. And I just went, yeah, that's me. I'm going to go away and start travel blogging. And I did that for, I think, a bit over 2 years. And I made a little bit of money, but what I realized eventually was just the competition was so fierce, right? Everybody with a iPhone was my competition pretty much. And that was a good failure because I learned a lot on how to grow websites and how to build websites and all that sort of stuff. And that was, it did flop though. Like it just, I was spending so much time on it and wasn't really worth what I was getting back. Like, at all. I was spending a lot of time on it. But that time grew into a lot of knowledge. And then I thought, all right, I'm going to start. The second one was I'm going to start a dropshipping business. And I got home and I got my phone and I just spent a month calling people to become suppliers for this store. And it was called Oz Globetrotter. Oh, no, it wasn't called. My blog was called Oz Globetrotter. And my dropshipping store was Globetrotter Gear. And I just wanted to put up a whole bunch of travel products, like, you know, backpacks and heaps of these different types of travel products. And I got a bunch of suppliers and I built this store and I started making a few sales in, but it took a fair bit of...
What year was this?
It might have been 2013. And I started making a few sales and I'm like, all right, cool. Now I just need to double this down. And I forgot how long it takes to really build a business and get traction, especially if I was doing it for free and not using paid advertising. And eventually I realized that I was just coming up against some pretty fierce competition. You know, all these big guys that are selling, you know, hundreds of these a week, and I'm selling like one every now and then. And it was pretty deflating where I just bit the bullet and went, all right, I'm just going to have to turn everything off and start again. And they're the two businesses that I started and I learned a lot. I didn't make a lot.
Well, your value was in the education of going through that. Dropshipping is something that it's a tough category to compete in, especially if you're doing that around 2013. That's pretty much when a lot of people are getting out of dropshipping. So you kind of start to, then you realize, well, why don't I go ahead and buy some businesses and websites that have already been established? When did you buy your first site?
So I bought my first one in 2014, at the end of 2014. And I was pretty hair-like. I rushed off into it and it was a good investment. And I got all my return back and everything like that. And it kept growing. But I should have taken a bit more time and a bit more, build a better process on due diligence. And I don't know if that's the same for everybody when they're buying their first website, but it was certainly the case for me. I didn't really seek out coaches or help or mentors. I was just running it on the fly and early 2014. And that, but when I did buy it, I realized like, wow, I'm earning so much more money from, you know, the share market when I was investing in the share market. Any sort of investment I have ever made, I was making more money. And I realized that was the norm at that time with the returns or the multiples that were around just in that year.
So where did you, how did you start looking for your first business, and how has that changed? I think one of the problems that buyers have today is deal flow, right? Every business that gets put on the market that is worth looking at has literally, you know, dozens, if not hundreds of people looking at it at the same time. Where did you find that first one, and what are you doing these days in order to really secure good deal flow?
Yeah, so I found out about this place, marketplace called Flippa. Then I went on there and realized there was a lot of not so great listings. And much like, and I spoke to the CEO of Flippa a couple of months ago, and they're making some amazing changes. New CEO, you know, it's really coming around, which is great. But then they just hadn't had people that, like, that you're allowed to sign up anonymously, and people were listing a lot of junky sites on there. And I felt it was a bit of the wild, wild west. And I was just trying to find this diamond in the rough. And I looked for a long time, and that's where I bought my first business. And where it's changed now is I'm not so much on those marketplaces that are out now. It's because you've got to sieve through so many listings to find something that's decent. And a lot of my clients, you know, they do that. They say, oh, I don't really spend too much time on there. And I say, have a look every now and then. But where we're really finding them is the brokers like you guys, where the listings, you guys have your brand name, right? You have a reputation. You don't want to list something that's a junky website or not so great. And that's why you have your process before you list it for sale. You don't want to sell something to somebody and it just go down the gurgler like that, because people are going to complain and bad reviews and all that sort of stuff. And that's why I like to look to the brokers like you guys, because they're more quality listings, and there's already been a slight bit of vetting done, and it makes the process so much easier when you come to do your due diligence. You guys actually help us buyers get more information rather than us have to rely on sellers as like, yeah, maybe I'll sell my site here and I'll see if I can, you know, get some interest. And they're just not like very prompt with their responses, should I say.
Sure. So are you still active in buying sites?
No, personally, I haven't bought a site in a while. I do look at a fair few sites though, especially through my clients. I help them do some due diligence processing and stuff like that. So it's great to keep me in the game. If I wasn't doing that, I'd be actively just purchasing. But yeah, I learned stuff. It's great to, because I learned so much from that process still with my clients, how I can sort of take a backward step and not be fully in the game, but come a bit out and just have a better, it's a really good approach for both client and myself. We both gain so much from it.
Yeah. So now you've transitioned over into this coaching because people saw what you're doing and all that. So what I'd love to learn is I'd like to pick your brain a little bit on what you're telling people in this coaching process and some of the problems that you're seeing. So let's start off with this. Out of the coaching clients, are the clients that you're coaching, these are all people that are looking to buy websites, and they're going out there and looking to maybe build a portfolio of these sites and get into the game. What are maybe some of the top mistakes that you see most commonly among people that are looking to buy?
Yeah, the most common one is where people just start seeing dollar signs. They start to see, and a lot of my clients hadn't really known that this industry even existed, right? And they start looking at sites much like a lot of people listening to this already know that, you know, your website is much like a property website where they can scroll through and look at listings, right? It's the same when people find this out. I notice when they first come to this, like, oh my God, I can buy this business for this much and the multiples this much. And they just go, this is amazing. And it's only taking X amount of hours. And they just go, they want to rush through it. And that's probably the biggest mistake, is they sell themselves into the business. And what I've noticed is that sometimes, and whether you like this guy or not, but Donald Trump says, sometimes the best investments are the ones we never make. And I find, and this is what I tell my clients as well, is that if you can't sell yourself out of the business because it's the data shows that it's so good, I feel that it's an investment that you need to really pursue. But instead of trying to sell yourself into the business, why don't you try and sell yourself out of it? And if you can't, then move forward with it. In saying that, cover all your steps during due diligence. And that's probably the biggest thing that I find when people come and want to buy a website. The second thing is a lot of people don't know so much about SEO and traffic and websites, how they work and stuff like that. So I have a process and a few lessons teaching people what it actually is first, how it is incorporated in websites and what it means for a website and how, you know, how important it is to gain traffic and to build your business up. And then there's obviously different techniques of marketing. And I think whether it's paid or, you know, SEO, and a lot of SEO now is paid SEO. But they're two very important things. I would say a top thing as a third thing would be people being confident in speaking to the seller and knowing what questions to ask and knowing how to ask those questions in a way that it's a conversation. I noticed when I first had my first conversation with the seller is I asked a question about SEO and then I started talking about the finances for 10 minutes. And then I went back to SEO and I could tell after I came back off that call and a few months later, I could tell the seller was just like, this guy's new to the game. And I made the call really clunky because I was asking questions haphazardly. So that's a big thing is coaching people to have the confidence to speak to sellers, because when they're first doing it, they're like, oh my God, I'm speaking to, like, I know that when I first did it, I was like, I'm speaking to a business juggernaut here that's owned a business, they're a gun, I'm nobody. And just teaching people, they're like, hey, you've learned so much through this process of working with me. You actually know a lot more than you think you do. It's just a state that, you know, state of being really. So getting them into state and really understanding like, hey, you've got this. And that's a huge thing that we have to teach for sure.
I want to go back to your first point here, the first mistake that you quoted there. And that's the people that are seeing just the dollar signs, right? And so they sell themselves into the business, as you said. Now, I've definitely seen that personally. I've experienced that as well. And I've published a blog post now several years ago where I talk about an acquisition I made that was a mistake. And I did just that, right? I sold myself into the business. And I just blew completely past all the red flags and caution signs and everything else. And I thought, I can take care of this. You know, I own a brokerage firm. I know what I'm doing. I can somehow get around the work, which you can't. But I want to talk about the extremes of that, right? Because you talk about being able to sell yourself out of the business. Can you sell yourself out of the business? Can you look at the data and say, this doesn't make sense? In my experience, there seems to be some personalities, though, out there that, A, either will selectively still look at the data in a way that they're selling themselves into the business. So you look at the data and you either excuse the stuff that doesn't make sense, or you rationalize it in ways that make sense for you, or you just hyper-focus on the benefits. But then I've seen the flip side as well. You know, I've talked to buyers that have been looking for businesses now for 3-4 years, and there's always something wrong with what they're looking at, which I get. You know, how do you coach a client to balance that out and to be able to really take that objective step back to say, you know, look, Mr. Buyer, I know that you're risk averse. A, buying any web-based business is risky. There's going to be risk in there. Or on the flip side, you know, hey, slow down, pump the brakes a little bit. We need to take an objective standpoint. Do you have any practical tips on how somebody can get that own self-assessment maybe of what type of personality they are?
Yeah, it is definitely, I don't know if it's just a personality thing. I think that's a huge point and probably is, but it's also where you are at in your journey and whether you're just, I know different times in my journey, I've been so gung-ho and then other times I've just been very stand back-ish. As for tips on how to navigate that is, I think people, if they ask themselves like, all right, if they just do a massive pros and cons list and they go, here's what could happen that I don't want to happen. And, you know, here's the cons and here's the pros. And then not just have yourself look at it, but have somebody outside of being invested in this this vehicle of investment to look at it as well. And I think that's very helpful. And that works for myself and my clients because I get to look at it because I'm not like invested in it. I had a call with a kid yesterday who's like, yeah, I want to go away and buy this business. I'm like, mate, do you think this is, and I didn't say like, don't buy this business. I just asked him questions in a way that helped him understand whether it was right for him or not, because that's when we get the most profound learnings is when we ask them questions and they come up with the answers themselves rather than us just blurt the answers onto them. But I feel that that's a really good technique of getting somebody else to, outside of it, have a look at the numbers and the pros and cons, and then that person asking the person who's looking at buying the business, like, are you willing to weigh up these risks? Are you willing to, you know, take on these risks with the possibility of achieving X result? And I've done that with my second business with my dad, and my third business with my dad. And my dad, I love him so much, but with parents, what I find is they just want to protect you, right? And they love you, but they just want to protect you. And dad was like seeing like, no, this is a terrible, terrible business. And a lot of the business was, the financials were like, because I was buying it in Australian dollars, like I wanted to buy it in Australian dollars because I was buying it from an Aussie seller, but they converted to US dollars for where the platform they're selling it on. And then also from US dollars into a different currency that they were trading through. And it made the financials very, very messy. And my dad just like flat out refused, do not buy this business. And I rushed off, and I didn't rush off, sorry. It took me like, I went through and I thought about this and I processed it for over a month. And I asked myself, am I willing to take this risk to possibly achieve X? And the answer was yes, because I knew the risk. I was willing to take it to achieve that. And it worked out amazingly well for me. But I think that's a great process that people can do.
Yeah, that's good. I think a lot of this, and this actually ties into my next question, because you said, you know, the third mistake that you see was that confidence in speaking to a seller. And how when you were speaking to sellers, you had a little bit of imposter syndrome. First of all, wondering, you know, why am I even on the phone? You're kind of all over the place with that, and giving the impression of not really being up for the game. I know we talk a lot to buyers, and on this podcast here, we talk a lot about making a good impression to a seller, right? Sellers in today's market, they have choices in who's going to buy their business usually. And sometimes the best offer doesn't win because there's a better buyer, right? So there might be another buyer who has a better offer on paper. But if a seller likes another buyer better, they might go with them. So there's that process that you can really use to ask the right questions and stay on track and making sure that, you know, here's the financial questions and now here's your product sourcing questions or your content guidelines or whatever the type of business you have. Do you teach a method for looking at approaches to buyer and seller conference calls?
Yeah. And that's definitely a good question. Like, how do you become an attractive buyer, right? Because you're so right. These people that know their business, and there's people that want to sell their business to somebody that can take it to the next level, not somebody who's going to just butcher it, you know, as soon as they get it. And I think that's really important for everybody who's a buyer looking to buy a business. If you can understand that and really respect that business, not just go, I'm going to come in and just be a wild, wild west cowboy and you know, do all this sort of stuff. I think that's a really good place to come from when you do go to jump on the phone, is respect that person has put a lot into that business. And if you come from a place of respect, the rest will fall into place. But as in for techniques, I feel on how to be attractive buyer is to ensure that you do as much research and you know as much as you can about online businesses, and you know the lingo. Like when people first start, they may not know what SEO is or SEM or, you know, CRO and all these different types of terms. If you can speak the language of the seller, that's going to definitely gain you some points, I feel. And if you are respectful and you make sure the conversation flows quite well and you're not too hard, like, you know, you don't make the interview or this, you know, you sell those questions too much like an interrogation. If you can have some enjoyment and make sure it's a fun and safe conversation, then I feel that you come across as a far attractive buyer. And there's also so many other techniques that you can use through NLP, so neuro-linguistic programming, and matching the seller's, you know, energy and how you contact and phrase your questions with them and all that sort of stuff. But if you can just forget about that and throw that out the window. If you come from a place of respect and you really understand the business, and not just the business, but the industry as a whole, then the buyer's going to see like, okay, wow, this person's really done a lot of due diligence. They're asking really good questions, and I can see that they care about this business, not just on a in like financial way, but they could be invested in this business to ensure it grows. And I want to be careful with invested in the business with emotions, because you do need to be attached to a certain point as well. I feel that I think they vary, all those things help quite largely into being an attractive buyer.
Yeah, no, I think a lot of that's very, very good advice there. I want to talk about some of the suggestions you would give to somebody who's getting into this initially. You talk a lot about knowing the language and understanding some basic concepts in SEO, and you teach some of these things as well. I know for myself, with Quiet Light Brokerage, we get people that are coming in from the offline world, the brick and mortar world, who are coming into this for the first time, and many of them just say, I want to buy an online business. Others might say, I want to buy an e-commerce business. They might have a few ideas of what they want or don't want. But, a common question I get is, do I need experience before buying an online business? So I'm going to throw that question at you. What do you think? Do you think somebody needs experience to buy an online business? And if so, what type of experience?
Yeah, I wouldn't say you need experience to buy one, but I would say you definitely need experience to grow one, and not just experience, but education, because everybody says like, oh, should you have experience? And you can't just, I know this when I first started looking for jobs when I was younger, it was like, you can't just go away and get a job. You've got to have some sort of experience, but you've got to start somewhere. And that somewhere is education. So if people do decide that like, hey, I'm going to go from like brick and mortar to online businesses, is like invest in your education in that. So then you can become more confident, not just, hey, when you're speaking to the seller and become an attractive buyer, but like, hey, I know what I'm going to do when I purchase this business. And I think it's a nerving thing for somebody to come to the online world and go, I'm going to buy a business, but not know what their plan of attack is or what their strategy is once they do end up owning that business. And if you have anybody that's listening and has that feeling of like, I don't know what I'm going to do, I would suggest that, hey, you go away and get a bit of education. And there's so many people out there that do teach people how to start online businesses, and that could be a place, or teach people how to buy websites as well. But understand and get some education on how the online business realm actually works. And then you put yourself into a better position for sure.
Yeah, that echoes what I would say as well. I often recommend to people to just understand the language. You don't have to be an SEO expert, but understand the basics of what people are talking about. But then understand what you're personally good at, right? Maybe it's negotiating contracts. And in that case, you can look for a business that can really optimize in that area and accelerate that. What are some of the trends that you're seeing recently? You're looking at a lot of deal flow and working with a lot of buyers who are currently in the market. Are you seeing any trends emerge over the past, say, 12 months and maybe even forward looking as well? Are there any trends that you see coming up here?
I think hugely, obviously, Amazon, right? They're making some massive changes. We're seeing a lot of Amazon Associate and Amazon FBA. Up until now, it's been big. Like a lot of Amazon FBA businesses are popping up, and they had started quite a few years ago, but it can take time for it to snowball and traction on for sure. And Amazon FBA is a great way to go about it. People, I think before this even existed, didn't realize that there was like things like Zappos and different companies and different ways you could do order fulfillment for, instead of having to do just drop shipping, you could buy bulk, from wherever you want in the world and send to an order fulfillment agency. But the way Amazon does it is, they make things so much easier for you and feasible for everybody. So that's something that I feel has definitely been trending, or whether it's had its trend or not, I'm not so sure. You can always speculate, but you can't always be certain. And I feel now that with a lot of changes that have been happening with Facebook advertising and different types of advertising where it's getting more expensive, and I've talked to a lot of people, especially on my side of the world in Australia, that have been having troubles with getting results in marketing on that platform. I feel hugely that SEO is coming, SEO and great content is going to come back into being a massive way to grow your business, the ones that you do buy. And I feel that's definitely, you're going to start trending a lot more. That's what I feel and that's what I see.
That's fascinating. I want to pick your brain a little bit on that. Why do you see that coming back? And then how do you counter the people that are saying, you know, voice aided search, Google Now and obviously Amazon Alexa and Siri are pulling away from, SEO. Where are you seeing the growth there, and what leads you to believe that that's going to be a good opportunity in the future?
Sorry, what are you saying? They're pulling away from SEO?
Well, voice-aided search as opposed to just type-initiated search where you get a list of results. You know, you ask Google, when was Christopher Columbus born, and you're going to get an answer right away as opposed to coming across a few content sites. Where do you see the opportunity in SEO? I guess that would be the main question.
Yeah, where I see the opportunity in that is in particular search as opposed to just where people, hey Siri or hey whatever it is and give me an answer, is that for those deeper questions where people can get a profound value, not just like a quick little win, like, you know, what's the temperature today or whatever it is, but for like something that's more in depth, like, hey Siri, how do I scale my business by using a specific type of conversion rate optimized? Sorry, my Siri just went off then.
You said hey Siri, so it wants to.
Did you hear that?
Just a little bit, yes. That's pretty funny.
Sorry, guys. And so I feel that if you want to go, like, hey, I want to learn how to do this type of conversion rate optimization on my business or my website, I feel that if you've got really good content behind that, as I'm not so sure whether it's a blog post, but could be podcasting or definitely some sort of way people can consume content in audio or video, I feel that that's gonna come up the top a lot more. That's the way people are consuming it a lot easier, I feel, these days. And I feel that that's going to win in content, in, you know, audio and visual, for sure.
Yeah, I think watching how content has evolved over the past 20 years has been fascinating.
Yeah.
We've been spitting out as much content as we can, and it's really matured to the point where if you're not offering, you know, quality content, you're just not going to compete at all.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it's gotten way more difficult. All right, we're pretty much at the end of our allotted time, but I do want to ask you, what sort of tips, if you were just trapped in an elevator with somebody for, you know, the 30-second ride up and down, and they said, oh, man, that's really cool, what would you want to tell me to get me started in this? What one tip would you give somebody who's just starting out?
Yeah, I would say, hey, go to website brokers such as you guys and see what is available out there and start learning about the different types of business models. And you can see how much the businesses cost, what their expenses are, what their income is, and then also what, you know, what the multiple would be. And you can see the sort of return, start running the figures, running the math, and then dig deeper into those business. And when you start getting prospectuses and on different business models, then you start to get a bit of an education based on different types of online businesses and then grow from there. And then once you start doing that and you get more experience in looking at that, and it takes time to do so, then you can decide if this is a route for you or not.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic advice. Well, where can people learn more about you or reach out to you?
Yeah. So www.buyingonlinebusinesses.com, businesses plural. And then, you know, you can search that in Google or any of the search engines, or go to my Facebook or social handles, which is just Jared Krause. So JaredKrause.
Awesome. Well, we'll link to those in the show notes. Jared, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
Today's podcast was produced by Podcast Motor and the Quiet Light Content Team. If you have a suggestion for a future podcast, or if you want to guess the quote from the beginning of the show for a chance at getting a shout out on the pod, email us at podcast@quietlightbrokerage.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and subscribe to our YouTube channel and this show wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.